Egzamin maturalny z języka angielskiego. Arkusz drugi. Rozumienie ze słuchu. Poziom rozszerzony. Wysłuchaj dokładnie informacji dotyczących tej części egzaminu. Rozumienie ze słuchu trwa 25 minut i składa się z trzech zadań. Zadania te sprawdzają umiejętność rozumienia wypowiedzi rodzimych użytkowników języka angielskiego. Usłyszysz nagranie, które zawiera zarówno teksty, jak i polecenia do poszczególnych zadań. Każdy tekst zostanie odtworzony dwa razy. Na płycie przewidziane są przerwy na zapoznanie się z treścią zadań oraz ich rozwiązanie sygnalizowane dźwiękiem przed wysłuchaniem każdego tekstu usłyszysz natomiast dźwięk. Rozwiązuj poszczególne zadania zgodnie z usłyszanymi poleceniami w trakcie słuchania tekstów oraz w trakcie trwania przerw po ich wysłuchaniu. Zadanie 9. Zapoznaj się z treścią zadania. Usłyszysz dwukrotnie zapowiedzi czterech programów telewizyjnych. Na podstawie usłyszanych informacji przyporządkuj jedno zdanie do każdego programu i wpisz odpowiednie litery do tabeli. Trzy zdania podane zostały dodatkowo i nie pasują do żadnego programu. Za każdą poprawną odpowiedź otrzymasz jeden punkt.
And this week, we'll be broadcasting a few documentaries really worth watching. Let me now present some of them.
1.
For some 20 years and on stages all over the world, actress Prunella Scales has played the part of Queen Victoria in a unique one-woman show. The show is based on diaries written by Victoria herself throughout her long life. Here in this programme, Prunella aims to deepen our understanding of the Queen still further as she goes on a journey to discover more about the person she has played for so long. From Balmoral to the Isle of Wight, in royal palaces and private homes, Prunella meets historical experts and descendants of those who knew the Queen. What emerges is not the granite-faced and unamused monarch of legend, but a more complex, more passionate, and more surprising woman altogether.
2.
About 260 years ago, Bonnie Prince Charlie triggered the last land battle in Britain. In this episode, father and son presenters, Peter and Dan Snow, follow his tracks as he marched an army from Scotland all the way to Derby and was then chased back for the final confrontation on Culloden Moor. As Peter reveals, with the help of cutting-edge graphics, how close Prince Charles came to success, Dan goes on a night march and sees how, without the aid of modern technology, the troops of Bonnie Prince Charlie made a fatal error on the eve of the battle.
3.
Terry Jones takes us on a tour of the Middle Ages, destroying old myths and discovering extraordinary stories of real people. Were the outlaws really like Robin Hood? And were the sheriffs all evil and corrupt? Terry discovers that sheriffs were actually pen-pushing bureaucrats, and the greatest threat to law and order in the Middle Ages were gangs of upper-crust outlaws terrorizing the country for the sole purpose of getting rich quickly. But those same outlaws died heroes just like Robin Hood. As you will see, the story is not just a black-and-white tale of goodies and baddies.
4.
She has her own bodyguards and lives in Paris in a humidified, air-conditioned box protected by triplex bulletproof glass. She is Leonardo da Vinci's Mona Lisa. Alan Yentob tells the story of how the Mona Lisa came to be the most famous work of art in the world. It's a tale full of notoriety, glamour and intrigue, as the Mona Lisa is abducted, vandalized, and exploited across the centuries. With the help of leading scholars and original research, Allen also finally solves the central mystery of the Mona Lisa, who she is and why she's smiling.
Wysłuchaj jeszcze raz tekstu do tego zadania.
And this week, we'll be broadcasting a few documentaries really worth watching. Let me now present some of them.
1.
For some 20 years and on stages all over the world, actress Prunella Scales has played the part of Queen Victoria in a unique one-woman show. The show is based on diaries written by Victoria herself throughout her long life. Here in this programme, Prunella aims to deepen our understanding of the Queen still further as she goes on a journey to discover more about the person she has played for so long. From Balmoral to the Isle of Wight, in royal palaces and private homes, Prunella meets historical experts and descendants of those who knew the Queen. What emerges is not the granite-faced and unamused monarch of legend, but a more complex, more passionate, and more surprising woman altogether.
2.
About 260 years ago, Bonnie Prince Charlie triggered the last land battle in Britain. In this episode, father and son presenters, Peter and Dan Snow, follow his tracks as he marched an army from Scotland all the way to Derby and was then chased back for the final confrontation on Culloden Moor. As Peter reveals, with the help of cutting-edge graphics, how close Prince Charles came to success, Dan goes on a night march and sees how, without the aid of modern technology, the troops of Bonnie Prince Charlie made a fatal error on the eve of the battle.
3.
Terry Jones takes us on a tour of the Middle Ages, destroying old myths and discovering extraordinary stories of real people. Were the outlaws really like Robin Hood? And were the sheriffs all evil and corrupt? Terry discovers that sheriffs were actually pen-pushing bureaucrats, and the greatest threat to law and order in the Middle Ages were gangs of upper-crust outlaws terrorising the country for the sole purpose of getting rich quickly. But those same outlaws died heroes just like Robin Hood. As you will see, the story is not just a black-and-white tale of goodies and baddies.
4.
She has her own bodyguards and lives in Paris in a humidified, air-conditioned box protected by triplex bulletproof glass. She is Leonardo da Vinci's Mona Lisa. Alan Yentob tells the story of how the Mona Lisa came to be the most famous work of art in the world. It's a tale full of notoriety, glamour and intrigue, as the Mona Lisa is abducted, vandalized and exploited across the centuries. With the help of leading scholars and original research, Allen also finally solves the central mystery of the Mona Lisa, who she is and why she's smiling.
Przenieś rozwiązanie na kartę odpowiedzi. Zadanie 10. Zapoznaj się z treścią zadania. Usłyszysz dwukrotnie wypowiedź na temat problemu zatłoczonych autostrad w Wielkiej Brytanii. Na podstawie usłyszanych informacji zdecyduj, które z podanych zdań są zgodne z treścią tekstu, a które nie. Zaznacz znakiem X odpowiednią rubrykę w tabeli. Za każdą poprawną odpowiedź otrzymasz jeden punkt.
Statistics show that only 12% of all journeys made are by public transport. Around 6 times as many are made by car. Unfortunately, the poor performance and questionable safety of British public transport has brought passenger figures down and is forcing more and more travellers into cars. But, as anyone who has experienced the motorways recently will agree, this isn't always a quick and easy alternative. About a quarter of all main roads in Britain are jammed for at least an hour a day, compared to our neighbours in Germany and France, where that figure is less than 10%. In fact, a car journey on the motorway from London to Manchester, that's less than 200 miles, frequently takes as long as 7 hours. That's an average speed of less than 30 miles per hour on roads with a maximum of 70 miles an hour. A fit cyclist, accustomed to lengthy periods in the saddle, could get there quicker. Of course, it isn't just the increased number of car owners that are choking our motorways. There are more trucks out there too. However, it's wise to be careful when apportioning the blame. After all, the motorways were originally built for freight. In 1994, a law was passed that all trucks over 7.5 tons had to be mechanically restricted to 56 miles per hour. This safety measure transformed British motorways overnight, and not necessarily for the better. Before the legislation was passed, there were always faster lorries and slower ones, so they were evenly spread along the length of the motorway. Now all lorries travel at the same speed, give or take a few miles per hour. As a consequence, they now bunch together in long lines travelling nose to tail, which has a devastating effect on the flow of traffic. In Germany, trucks over 7.5 tons are confined to the inside lane during peak hours and restricted from overtaking. Unlike in Britain, in many European countries, trucks are also banned from driving on Sundays and public holidays. Also, more goods are transported by rail and even barges. Perhaps this goes some way to explain why their roads have only a fraction of the problems that ours do.
Wysłuchaj jeszcze raz tekstu do tego zadania.
Statistics show that only 12% of all journeys made are by public transport. Around 6 times as many are made by car. Unfortunately, the poor performance and questionable safety of British public transport has brought passenger figures down and is forcing more and more travellers into cars. But, as anyone who has experienced the motorways recently will agree, this isn't always a quick and easy alternative. About a quarter of all main roads in Britain are jammed for at least an hour a day, compared to our neighbours in Germany and France, where that figure is less than 10%. In fact, a car journey on the motorway from London to Manchester, that's less than 200 miles, frequently takes as long as 7 hours. That's an average speed of less than 30 miles per hour on roads with a maximum of 70 miles an hour. A fit cyclist, accustomed to lengthy periods in the saddle, could get there quicker. Of course, it isn't just the increased number of car owners that are choking our motorways. There are more trucks out there too. However, it's wise to be careful when apportioning the blame. After all, the motorways were originally built for freight. In 1994, a law was passed that all trucks over 7.5 tons had to be mechanically restricted to 56 miles per hour. This safety measure transformed British motorways overnight, and not necessarily for the better. Before the legislation was passed, there were always faster lorries and slower ones, so they were evenly spread along the length of the motorway. Now all lorries travel at the same speed, give or take a few miles per hour. As a consequence, they now bunch together in long lines travelling nose to tail, which has a devastating effect on the flow of traffic. In Germany, trucks over 7.5 tons are confined to the inside lane during peak hours and restricted from overtaking. Unlike in Britain, in many European countries, trucks are also banned from driving on Sundays and public holidays. Also, more goods are transported by rail and even barges. Perhaps this goes some way to explain why their roads have only a fraction of the problems that ours do.
Przenieś rozwiązanie na kartę odpowiedzi. Zadanie 11. Zapoznaj się z treścią zadania. Usłyszysz dwukrotnie wywiad z prezenterem telewizyjnym. Z podanych możliwości odpowiedzi wybierz właściwą, zgodną z treścią tekstu. Zakreśl literę A, B, C lub D. Za każdą poprawną odpowiedź otrzymasz jeden punkt.
Now let's find out the answers to some of your questions. I'm going to quiz John Hammond, one of the forecasters in our team, on your behalf. What did you do before becoming a BBC broadcast meteorologist?
I studied for a geography degree at Salford University, followed by a master's in meteorology at Birmingham University. On completing my Master of Science, I worked at regional weather centres in Nottingham, Bristol and Plymouth. This involved a variety of forecasting work for aviation, local industry and some local radio too. However, it wasn't until the mid-1990s that I started TV weather presenting. I spent around 7 years as a Met Office forecaster at ITV until joining the BBC Weather Centre in the spring of 2003.
Why did you want to be a broadcast meteorologist?
I think it's the best job in the Met Office. If you're interested in the weather, and you like to show off, it's the job for you.
What are the good things about your job?
No 2 days of weather are the same, so every day is a brand new adventure. It's a great team at the Weather Centre, and we manage to have a good laugh as well as doing the serious job of weather forecasting. Of course, it's also a privilege to be working in television and occasionally meeting some famous people too.
Are there any drawbacks?
Well, the weather never sleeps. I mean, staying up all night is one thing, but presenting the weather to the nation at 4 in the morning is another. Thank goodness for makeup.
Do you get nervous before a broadcast?
I always get a little nervous before broadcasts, especially on a day when there's lots of severe weather around. I find I need the nerves to keep my broadcast pacey and energetic.
Have you ever made any mistakes?
Most days.
When and why did you first get interested in weather?
I've been interested in the weather for as far back as I can remember. I used to watch every BBC bulletin when I was very little. I even wrote to the weatherman, Bert Ford, when I was about 4, asking for some tips for becoming a weatherman. Given where I've ended up, it must have been sound advice. I'm very lucky.
Wysłuchaj jeszcze raz tekstu do tego zadania.
Now let's find out the answers to some of your questions. I'm going to quiz John Hammond, one of the forecasters in our team, on your behalf. What did you do before becoming a BBC broadcast meteorologist?
I studied for a geography degree at Salford University, followed by a master's in meteorology at Birmingham University. On completing my Master of Science, I worked at regional weather centres in Nottingham, Bristol and Plymouth. This involved a variety of forecasting work for aviation, local industry and some local radio too. However, it wasn't until the mid-1990s that I started TV weather presenting. I spent around 7 years as a Met Office forecaster at ITV until joining the BBC Weather Centre in the spring of 2003.
Why did you want to be a broadcast meteorologist?
I think it's the best job in the Met Office. If you're interested in the weather and you like to show off, it's the job for you.
What are the good things about your job?
No 2 days of weather are the same, so every day is a brand new adventure. It's a great team at the Weather Centre, and we manage to have a good laugh as well as doing the serious job of weather forecasting. Of course, it's also a privilege to be working in television, and occasionally meeting some famous people too.
Are there any drawbacks?
Well, the weather never sleeps. I mean, staying up all night is one thing, but presenting the weather to the nation at 4 in the morning is another. Thank goodness for makeup.
Do you get nervous before a broadcast?
I always get a little nervous before broadcasts, especially on a day when there's lots of severe weather around. I find I need the nerves to keep my broadcast pacey and energetic.
Have you ever made any mistakes?
Most days.
When and why did you first get interested in weather?
I've been interested in the weather for as far back as I can remember. I used to watch every BBC bulletin when I was very little. I even wrote to the weatherman, Bert Ford, when I was about 4, asking for some tips for becoming a weatherman. Given where I've ended up, it must have been sound advice. I'm very lucky.
Przenieś rozwiązanie na kartę odpowiedzi. Czas przeznaczony na tę część egzaminu minął. Sprawdź, czy wszystkie rozwiązania zostały przeniesione na kartę odpowiedzi. Następnie przystąp do wykonywania pozostałych zadań.